each other, I told him, which made him bark and wiggle harder. You may regret that more than me. Sitting alone in my bedroom, I can hear Mom yelling. Dad pleads with her, then shouts back. They turned the television on before they slammed their bedroom door shut, but it's not loud enough to cover their fighting. Lately, they fight all the time. I pick up the remote to my favorite radio-controlled car and drive it into the wall, over and over. It doesn't help. Mom and Dad love each other. They look at each other for a long time, smiling, like they forget anyone else is around. They touch each other a lot, holding hands, kissing. They kiss a lot. It's gross, but it's better than the screaming and crying they've been doing the last couple of weeks. Even Dad, who's always smiling and laughing, has been sad. His eyes are red all the time, and he hasn't shaved the hair off his face in days. I'm scared they're going to split up, like my friend Kevin's parents did. The sun goes down slowly, but the fighting doesn't stop. Mom's voice is hoarse now and scratchy from tears. Glass breaks. Something heavy hits the wall and makes me jump. It's been a long time since lunch, and my stomach is growling, but I'm not hungry. I really feel like throwing up. The only light in my room comes from the television, which is showing some boring movie I don't like. I hear my parents' bedroom door open, then shut. A few minutes later, the front door opens and shuts too. Our apartment goes all quiet in a way that makes me feel sick again. When my bedroom door finally opens, Mom stands there like a shadow with light shining all around her. She asks me why I'm sitting in the dark, but I don't answer her. I'm mad at her for being so mean to Dad. He never starts the fights. It's always her. About something she saw on television or read in the paper or heard from her friends. They're all talking bad about Dad, saying things I know aren't true. My dad isn't a liar or a thief. Mom should know that. She shouldn't listen to other people who don't know him like we do. Gideon! Mom flips the lights on, and I jerk in surprise. She's older. She smells like stale milk and baby powder. My room is different. My toys are gone. The carpet beneath me is now a rug over stone floors. My hands are bigger. I stand, and I'm the same height as her. What? I snap, crossing my arms. You have to stop this. She swipes at the tears streaming from her eyes. You can't keep acting like this. Get out. The sickness in my gut spreads, dampening my palms until I clench them into fists. These lies have to stop. We have a new life now, a good life. Chris is a good man. This doesn't have anything to do with Chris, I bite out, wanting to hit something. I never should have said anything. I don't know why I thought anyone would believe me. You can't! I jerked upright, panting, the sheet in my hands tearing violently. It took a moment for the pounding of my blood to subside, as I tuned in to the incessant barking that woke me. Scrubbing at my face, I cursed, then jumped as Lucky scrambled up the hanging comforter, pulling himself onto the bed. He leaped, tackling me in the chest. For fuck's sake, calm down! He whined and curled into my lap, making me feel like a dick. I caught him up, holding him against my sweaty chest. Sorry, I muttered, stroking his head. Closing my eyes, I pushed back and leaned against the headboard, willing my pulse to slow. It took several minutes to get my bearings, and about that long to realize that petting Lucky was calming me down. I laughed to myself, then reached for my phone on the nightstand. The time, a little after 2 in the morning, gave me pause. So did the need to be strong, to handle my own crap. But a lot had happened since I first called Ava to talk about a nightmare. Good things. "Hey," Ava answered, sounding groggy and sexy.
"You okay?"
"Better now that I'm hearing your voice."
"You having puppy troubles? Or a nightmare? Maybe you're feeling frisky?"
Calm settled over me. I'd been braced for a push. Seemed she was going to ease me into it instead. Yet another reason for me to try harder to give her what she wanted, regardless of my first instincts about it. Because when Ava was happy, I was happy. Maybe all of the above.
"Okay."
Sheets rustled.
"Take it from the top, Ace."
If I latch the crate door, Lucky bitches about it, and I can't sleep. She laughed.
"You're a softie. He's got your number. Did you put him in your office?"
"No. He barks in there, and I still can't sleep. I ended up just closing the crate door without locking it, and he settled down."
"He's not going to learn to control his bladder if you don't crate train him."
I looked down at the beagle curled up and sleeping in my lap. He woke me from a nightmare. I think he did it on purpose. She was quiet a minute.
"Tell me about it."
I did, and she listened. "He'd been trying to jump up to the bed earlier and couldn't make it," I finished. "He's too little, and the bed's too high. But he hauled his ass up here to wake me." Her exhale drifted across the line.
"Guess he can't sleep when you're making noise either."
It took me a second, then I laughed. The lingering distress from the dream dissipated like smoke in a breeze. "I feel the sudden urge to take you over my knee and spank you, Angel." Amusement warmed her voice.
"Try it, babe. See what happens."
I knew what would happen. She was the one who couldn't see it. Yet.
"Going back to your dream," she murmured. "I know I've said it before, but I'll say it again. I really think you need to bring Hugh up to your mother again. I know it'll be painful, but I think it has to be done."
"It won't change anything."
"You don't know that for sure."
"I do." I shifted, and Lucky gave a protesting grunt. "I didn't get around to telling you earlier. Chris filed for divorce."
"What? When?"
"I'm not sure. I just heard about it today from Ireland. I talked to Chris after work, but he just went over their prenup and let me know that he wanted to make some added concessions. We didn't discuss his reasons for wanting to end the marriage."
"Do you think it's because he found out about Hugh?"
I sighed, grateful I could talk to her about it. "I think it's too much of a coincidence to be totally unrelated."
"Wow."
She cleared her throat.
"I think I really love your stepfather."
I couldn't say how I felt about Chris. I didn't know. When I think about my mother being upset about this, I can picture it, Ava. I've seen it before.
"I know you have."
"I hate it. I hated her like that. It hurt me to see her that way."
"You love her. That's okay."
And I loved Ava for her lack of judgment, her unqualified devotion. It gave me the courage to say, "I'm also glad.
What kind of asshole feels good that his mother is hurting? There was a long pause.
She hurt you. She's still hurting you. It's a natural animal instinct to want to see her wounded too. But I think what you're glad about is having a champion. Someone who's telling her it really did happen to you and it's not okay.
My eyes closed. If I had a champion, it was my wife.
Do you want me to come back over?
She asked. I almost said no. My routine after a nightmare was a long shower, followed by losing myself in work. It was what I knew, how I dealt with it. But soon she'd be living with me, sharing my life in a way I needed but wasn't wholly prepared for. I had to start making adjustments for that. More than the logistics, though, was that I wanted her right then. Wanted to see her, smell her, feel her close. "I'll come get you," I told her. "I'll take a quick shower and text you before I head out."
"Okay. I'll be ready. I love you, Gideon."
I took a deep breath, let the words flow through me. "I love you too, Angel." I woke again with the sun, feeling rested despite the hours I'd spent awake. Stretching, I felt something warm and furry shift against my arm, then the lash of a friendly tongue against my biceps. Opening one eye, I glanced at Lucky. "Can't you keep that thing in your mouth?" Ava rolled onto her back and smiled, her eyes still closed.
"Can't blame him. You're extremely lickably delicious."
"Bring your tongue over here, then." Her head turned my way, and her eyes opened. Her hair was mussed, and her cheeks pink. I grabbed Lucky and tucked him against my stomach as I rolled to my side. Propping my head on one hand, I took in the sight of my sleepy wife, feeling a rare contentment just from starting the day with her in my bed. Fact was, I shouldn't have risked it. Ava hadn't seen the state of my sheets since I changed them before leaving to get her, but they were only a small sample of the damage I could cause when sleeping. Neither Lucky nor my wife was safe near me while I was sleeping. It was only because I never had multiple nightmares in one night that I'd taken the chance. And because I missed Ava fiercely. She wasn't alone in her craving.
"I'm glad you called me," she murmured.
Reaching over, I brushed my fingertips down her cheek. "Didn't turn out so badly." She moved slightly and kissed my hand. Ava saw the worst there was in me and loved me more each time she did. I'd stopped questioning it. I just had to deserve her, and I would. I had a lifetime to work on it. "You're not planning any more ambushes on enemies today, are you?" I asked.
"No."
She stretched, drawing my eye to where her full tits strained against the ribbed cotton of her tank top.
"But I'm ready if someone decides to ambush me."
I dropped Lucky to the floor and snatched Ava close, rolling on top of her. Her legs widened instinctively, and I settled between them, circling my hips to rock my cock against her cunt. She gasped and grabbed my shoulders, her eyes wide.
"I wasn't talking about you, Ace."
"I'm not someone." I buried my face in the warmth of her neck, nuzzling her. She smelled heavenly, soft and sweet, totally sexy. Hard, I rubbed against her, feeling the heat of her through her underwear and the silk of my pants. She softened for me, melted in the way that turned me on ferociously.
"No,"
she whispered, her eyes darkening. She reached down and grabbed my ass, digging her nails in, urging me on.
You're the one, the only one for me.
As luxurious and feminine as Eva was, she'd grown stronger through Krav Maga. That turned me on, too. My head lowered, my mouth brushing over hers. My heart pounded, struggling to accept what she meant to me. The way she made me feel was so fresh and new, yet would never get old. Maybe that was why I'd gone through everything I had, so I would be able to appreciate her when I found her. I would never take her for granted. A tongue that wasn't my wife's licked my side, tickling me. I jerked, cursing, and Eva laughed. I glared over my shoulder at the little offender, who hopped with excitement, tail wagging madly. "Listen, Lucky, you're not living up to your name." Eva giggled.
"He's helping you live up to your promise to behave."
I turned my glare back to the wife, whose nails were still firmly dug into my ass. Which had the caveat that you behave as well. Pulling her hands away, Eva held them up by her head, waggling her fingers. But her gaze was hot, and her lips parted with rapid breaths. She shivered beneath me, even while her skin felt feverish. Her desire for me soothed my own raging need. And her commitment to waiting, now that I knew the reason for it, gave me the strength to move away. It was physically painful to separate from her. Her low moan of anguish echoed inside me, reflecting my own. I flopped onto my back and was immediately subjected to a tongue bath, Lucky style.
"He really loves you."
Eva rolled onto her side and reached out to scratch behind his ears. That had the welcome effect of luring him over to her. Her squeal of laughter, as Lucky proceeded to slather her face, made me smile, despite my aching dick. I could complain about the damn dog, lack of sex and sleep, and more. But really, my life was as close to perfect as I could want. Once I got to work, I powered through my morning. The release of the new Gen 10 gaming console was imminent, and while speculation was rampant, we had managed to keep the virtual reality component a secret. VR was in development everywhere, but Cross Industries was years ahead of the competition. I knew decisively that Landcore's Phase 1 system was simply an overhaul, with advanced optics and increased speed. It could compete with the previous generation Gen 10, but that was all. Shortly before lunch, I took the time to call my mother.
"Gideon,"
she sighed tremulously.
"I suppose you heard?"
"Yes. I'm sorry." I could tell she was hurting. "If you need anything, please let me know."
"Chris is the one who suddenly isn't happy in our marriage,"
she said bitterly.
"And it's all my fault, of course."
I softened my tone, but spoke firmly. "Not to be insensitive, but the details don't concern me. How are you?"
"Talk to him."
The plea was heartfelt. Her voice cracked.
"Tell him he's made a mistake."
I debated how to answer. The assistance I offered was fiduciary, not personal. There was nothing personal left in my relationship with my mother. Still, I found myself saying, "You won't want my advice, but I'll offer it anyway. You might want to consider therapy." There was a pause.
"I can't believe you, of all people, would suggest that."
"Preaching what I practice." My gaze slid to the photo of my wife, as it so often did during my day. Ava suggested couples counseling shortly after we began dating. She wanted something more out of our relationship. I wanted her, so I agreed. Initially, I was just going through the motions, but now I can say it's been really worthwhile.
"She started all of this," she hissed. "You're such a smart man, Gideon, but you can't see what she's doing."
"And this is where I say goodbye, Mother," I replied, before she got me riled. "Call if you need anything." I hung up, then spun in my chair, making a slow revolution all the way around. The disappointment and anger that always accompanied interactions with my mother was there, simmering. But I was more aware of it than usual. Maybe because I'd so recently dreamed of her, reliving the moment when I had realized she would never come around, was deliberately choosing to turn a blind eye for reasons I would never comprehend. For years, I made excuses for her. I manufactured dozens of reasons for her refusal to protect me, to give myself some comfort. Until I realized she was doing the same thing in reverse, making up stories about why I'd lie about being abused so she could live with her decision to pretend it never happened. So I stopped. She had failed me as a mother, but preferred to believe I'd failed her as a son. And so it went. When I faced my desk again, I picked up the phone and called my brother.
"What do you want?" he answered.
I could picture the scowl on his face, a face very unlike mine. Of my mother's three children, only Christopher resembled his father more than he did our mom. His acrimony had the predictable effect of making me want to bait him.
"The pleasure of hearing your voice. What else?"
"Cut the shit, Gideon. Did you call to gloat? Your fondest wish has finally come true."
Leaning back in my chair, I looked up at the ceiling. "I'd tell you I'm very sorry your parents are divorcing, but you wouldn't believe me, so I won't bother. Instead, I'll say that I'm here for you, if you need me."
"Go to hell!"
He hung up. I pulled the receiver away from my ear and held it aloft a moment. Contrary to Christopher's belief, I hadn't always disliked him. There had been a time when I welcomed him in my life. For a short time, I'd had a comrade, a brother. The animosity I felt now, he'd earned. But no matter. I would take care of him and see that he didn't stumble too badly, whether he liked it or not. Returning the handset to its cradle, I got back to work. After all, I couldn't have anything pressing over the weekend. I planned to be completely incommunicado while with my wife. I studied Dr. Peterson, who sat completely at ease across from me. He wore dark, loose jeans with a tucked-in white shirt, as comfortable as I'd ever seen him. I wondered if that was a deliberate decision in an effort to seem as innocuous as possible. He knew my history with therapists now, understood why I would always find them threatening to some degree.
"How did your weekend in Westport go?" he asked.
"Did she call you?" In the past, when Ava wanted to make sure I discussed something in therapy, she would bring it up to Dr. Peterson in advance. I grumbled about it and often didn't appreciate it, but her motivation was her love for me, and I couldn't bitch about that.
"No."
He smiled, and it was gentle, almost fond.
"I saw the photographs of you and Ava."
That surprised me. I wouldn't have taken you for the type to follow the tabloids.
"My wife does. She showed me the pictures because she found them very romantic. I have to agree with her. You both looked very happy."
"We are."
"How do you get along with Ava's family?"
I settled back,
draping my arm over the armrest. I've known Richard Stanton for many years, and Monica for the last few. Casual and business acquaintances are very different from in-laws. His perceptiveness rankled. Still, I was honest. It was awkward. Unnecessarily so, but I dealt with it. Dr. Peterson's smile widened. How did you deal with it? I focused on Ava. So you maintained distance from the others? No more than usual. He scribbled notes into his tablet. Anything else happened since I saw you on Thursday? My mouth twisted wryly. She bought me a dog, a puppy. He looked up at me. Congratulations. I shrugged. Ava's tickled by the whole thing. Is it her dog, then? No. She got all the gear and dropped him in my lap. That's quite a commitment. He'll be fine. Animals are good at self-sufficiency. Because he waited with expectant patience, I moved on. My stepfather filed for divorce. Dr. Peterson's head tilted a little as he studied me. We've gone from in-laws to a new dog to the dissolution of your parents' marriage in the space of a few minutes. That's a tremendous amount of change for someone who strives for structure. That was stating the obvious, so I didn't add anything. You seem remarkably composed, Gideon. Because things are going well with Ava? Exceptionally well. I knew the contrast to last week's therapy session was striking. I'd been wild with panic over the separation from Ava, terrified and frantic that I might lose her. I could recall the feelings with anguished clarity, but I had difficulty accepting how quickly I had unraveled. I didn't recognize that desperate man, couldn't reconcile him with what I knew about myself. He nodded slowly. Of the three things you mentioned, how would you rank them from most important to least important? That would depend on your definition of importance. Fair enough. Which would you say impacts you most? The dog. Does he or she have a name? I held back a smile. His name is Lucky. He noted that, for whatever reason. Would you buy Ava a pet? The question took me aback. I answered without really thinking about it. No. Why not? I considered that a minute. As you pointed out, it's a commitment. Are you resentful that she made you take on that commitment? No. Do you have any pictures of Lucky? I frowned. No. Where are you going with this? I'm not sure. He set his tablet aside and held my gaze. Bear with me a minute. Okay. Taking on a pet is a big responsibility, similar to adopting a child. They're dependent on you for food and shelter, for companionship and love. Dogs more so than cats or other animals. So I've been told, I said dryly. You have the family you were born into and the family you've married into, but you keep yourself separate from both. Their activities and overtures don't impact you in a meaningful way because you don't allow them to. They're disruptive to the order of your life, so you keep them at a comfortable distance. I don't see anything wrong with that. I'm certainly not the only person to say family is who you choose. Who have you chosen, aside from Ava? It wasn't a choice. I pictured her in my mind. The way she'd been when I first saw her. She'd been dressed to work out, her face naturally bare, her amazing body hugged by form-fitting fitness gear. Just like thousands of other women on the island of Manhattan. But she'd struck me like lightning, without even knowing I was there. My concern is that she's become a coping mechanism for you, Dr. Peterson said. You've found someone who loves you and believes you, who supports you and gives you strength. In many ways, you feel like she's the only one who will ever truly understand you. She's in a unique position to do so. Not that unique, he said kindly. I've read the transcripts of some of your speeches. You're aware of the statistics. Yes, I knew that one in every four women I met had been exposed to sexual abuse. That didn't change the fact that none of them had evoked the feelings of affinity that Ava did. If there's a point, Doctor, I'd like you to get to it. I want you to be mindful of a potential tendency to seclude yourself with Ava, to the exclusion of everyone else. I asked if you would gift her with a pet, because I can't see you doing so. That would shift her focus and affection away from you, even if only slightly, while your focus and affection is centered entirely on her. I drummed my fingertips on the arm of the sofa. That's not unusual for newlyweds. It's unusual for you. He leaned forward. Did Ava say why she gave Lucky to you? I hesitated, preferring to keep something so intimate to myself. She wants me to have more unconditional love. He smiled. And I'm certain it will give her great pleasure to see you reciprocating that. She's pushed very hard for you to open up to her and to me. Now that you're taking those steps, she'll want you to open up to others. The bigger her intimate circle is, the happier she is. She wants to pull you into that, not have you pull her out of it. My lungs expanded on a long, deep breath. He was right, much as I hated to admit it. Dr. Peterson sat back again and resumed scrawling on the screen of his tablet, giving me time to absorb what he said. I asked him something that had been on my mind. When I told you about Hugh, he gave me his full attention. Yes? You didn't seem surprised. And you want to know why? His gaze was kind. There were certain markers. I could say I deduced it, but that wouldn't be entirely true. I felt my phone buzz in my pocket, but ignored it, despite knowing that only a handful of people were programmed to bypass the Do Not Disturb setting I used during my meetings with Dr. Peterson. I saw Ava shortly after she moved to New York, he went on. She asked me if it was possible for two abuse survivors to have a meaningful relationship. It was only a few days later when you contacted me and asked if I'd be open to seeing you, in addition to seeing you and Ava as a couple. My pulse quickened. I hadn't told her then. I didn't until we'd been coming to you for a while. But I'd had nightmares, the really bad ones that had been coming less frequently of late. My phone buzzed again, and I pulled it out. Excuse me. It was Angus. I'm outside the office door, he'd texted first. This time, it's urgent. My spine stiffened. Angus wouldn't disturb me without a very good reason. I stood. I'll have to cut this short, I told Dr. Peterson. He set aside his tablet and rose to his feet. Is everything all right? If not, I'm sure you'll hear about it on Thursday. I shook his hand quickly and left the office, passing through the empty reception area before stepping out to the hallway. Angus stood there, looking grim. He wasted no time. The police are at the penthouse with Ava. My blood turned to ice. I strode to the elevator with Angus falling into step beside me. Why? Anne Lucas filed charges of harassment.
7. My hand shook as I poured freshly brewed coffee into 3 mugs. I couldn't tell if that was because I was so pissed off or because I was afraid. Certainly, I was both. Being a cop's daughter, I understood the unwritten rules followed by those who worked behind the blue wall of law enforcement. And after everything Gideon and I had been through regarding Nathan's death, I was doubly on my guard now. But it wasn't Detectives Graves and Mikna of the Homicide Division who wanted to speak to me. I couldn't decide if that made me more or less anxious. They were the devil I knew, so to speak. And while I wouldn't go so far as to call Shelley Graves an ally, she'd dropped the case when she still had questions without answers. This time around, it was Officers Pena and Williams who had shown up on our doorstep. And it was Ann Lucas who sent them my way. That fucking bitch. I'd had to cut my appointment with Blair Ash short, knowing it was unavoidable that the designer would pass the officers in the lobby when he exited the private elevator. I didn't have time to worry about what he'd make of that. Instead, I took the brief time alone to call Raoul and tell him to find Arash Madani. I wanted to call Gideon, but he was with Dr. Peterson, and I considered that more important. I could handle the police. I knew the basics. Have an attorney present and be succinct. Don't elaborate or offer information not asked for. Setting the 3 mugs of coffee on a serving tray, I searched for something to pour the half and half into.
"You don't have to go to any trouble, Ms. Trammell,"
Officer Pena said as he and his partner entered the kitchen with their hats tucked under their arms. Pena had a baby face that made him look younger than he probably was, which I guessed was close to my age. Williams was a petite, curvy black woman with sharp cop eyes that told me she'd seen things I would never want to. I'd asked them to wait in the living room, and they had followed me instead. That made me feel hunted, which I'm sure was part of their intention. It's no trouble. I gave up trying to be classy about the half and half and just set the carton on the island. And I'm waiting for my attorney to arrive, so there's really not much else for me to do in the meantime. Officer Williams eyed me coolly, as if she were wondering why I felt the need for counsel. I didn't have to justify myself, but knew it wouldn't hurt to let them know why I was cautious. My dad's on the job in California. He'd chew me out if I didn't follow his advice. I grabbed the box of sugar I'd dug out of the pantry and set it on the tray before moving it all over to the island.
"Where in California?"
Pena asked, grabbing a mug and taking his coffee black. "Oceanside?"
"San Diego area, right? Nice."
"It is, yes." Williams took her coffee with a splash of half and half and a whole lot of sugar, which she poured straight from the box.
"Is Mr. Cross here?"
"He's in a meeting." She kept her gaze on me as she lifted her mug to her lips.
"Who is the guy leaving when we came up?"
The deliberate casualness of her tone made me glad I'd sent word to Arash. I didn't believe for a minute that the question was just small talk. "Blair Ash. He's the interior designer working on some renovations we're doing."
"You live here?"
Pena asked.
"We stopped by an apartment on the Upper West Side we heard was yours."
"I'm in the process of moving in." He leaned into the island and looked around.
"Nice place."
"I think so, too." Williams caught my eye.
"Have you been dating Gideon Cross long?"
"She's married to me, actually,"
Gideon said, appearing in the doorway. Pena straightened, swallowing quickly. Williams set her mug down with enough force to spill some coffee. Gideon's gaze swept over all of us, then locked with mine. He looked perfect, his suit pristine, his tie immaculately knotted, his dark hair framing that savagely beautiful face. There was the faintest shadow of stubble around his sensual mouth. That, and the sexy length of his hair, lent a dangerous edge to his otherwise civilized appearance. Not even the 2 cops standing between us could diminish the surge of hunger that flooded me at the sight of him. I watched as he came toward me, shrugging out of his suit jacket as if it were the most natural thing to have two of New York's finest there to question me. He tossed it over the back of a bar stool at the island and moved beside me, taking my coffee out of my hands and pressing a kiss to my temple.
"Gideon Cross," he said, extending his hand to both officers. "And this is our counsel, Arash Madani."
It was then I noticed that Arash had entered the kitchen behind my husband. The officers, as focused on Gideon as I was, didn't seem to have noticed him either. Supremely confident, with dark good looks and easy charm, Arash swept into the room and took over, introducing himself with a wide smile. The disparity between him and Gideon was striking. Both men were elegant, handsome, and poised. Both were courteous. But Arash was accessible, relatable. Gideon was imposing and remote. I looked up at my husband, watching as he drank from my mug. "Would you like some black coffee instead?" His hand swept down my back, his eyes on the officers and Arash.
"I'd love some." "It's good that you're here, Mr. Cross," Pena said. "Dr. Lucas also filed a complaint against you." "Well, that was fun,"
Arash said, an hour later, after showing the officers out to the elevator. Gideon shot him a look as he deftly opened a bottle of Malbec.
"If that's your idea of entertainment, you need to get out more. I was planning on doing that tonight, with a very hot blonde, I might add, until I got your call."
Arash pulled out one of the island bar stools and sat. I scooped up all the mugs and moved them to the sink. "Thank you, Arash."
"You're most welcome."
"I bet you don't step into courtrooms all that often, but I want to be there the next time you do. You're awesome." He grinned.
"I'll be sure to let you know." "Don't thank him for doing his job,"
Gideon muttered. He poured the dark red wine into three glasses. "I'm thanking him for doing his job well," I countered, still impressed by the way Arash worked. The attorney was charismatic and disarming, as well as humble when it served his purposes. He put everyone at ease, then let them do the talking while he figured out his best angle of attack. Gideon scowled at me.
"What the hell do you think I'm paying him so much to do? Fuck up?"
"Dial it back, Ace," I said calmly. "Don't let that bitch get to you, and don't take that tone with me. Or your friend." Arash winked at me.
"I think he's jealous you like me so much."
Then I saw the way Gideon glared at Arash, and my brows went up. "Seriously?"
"Get back on topic. How are you fixing this?"
my husband challenged, looking daggers at his friend over the rim of his wine glass.
"Fixing your fuck-up?"
Arash asked, his brown eyes bright with silent laughter.
"You both provided Anne Lucas the ammunition for this by going to her place of employment on two separate occasions. You're damned lucky she embellished her story with a little assault accusation against Ava. If she'd just stuck with the truth, she'd have you both by the throats."
I went to the fridge and started pulling out items to throw together for dinner. I'd been kicking myself for being stupid all evening. It would never have occurred to me to think she might voluntarily reveal her sordid extramarital affair with Gideon. She was supposed to be an upstanding member of the mental health community, and her husband was a well-regarded pediatrician. I'd underestimated her, and I hadn't listened to Gideon when he had warned me she was dangerous. The result was that she had a legitimate complaint that first Gideon had barged into her office during a therapy session, and then I'd ambushed her at work again 2 weeks later. Arash accepted the glass Gideon slid briskly over to him.
"The district attorney may or may not decide to go after her for falsely reporting an incident, but she damaged her credibility by accusing Ava of putting hands on her when security footage proves otherwise. Very fortunate, you having that, by the way."
Learning that Gideon did indeed own the building Anne Lucas worked in hadn't surprised me too much. My husband needed control, and having that sort of hold over the businesses of both the Lucases was just like him. It shouldn't have to be said, Arash went on, but when confronted by crazy, do not engage. Gideon arched his brow at me. It chafed, but he was right. He told me so. The attorney shot warning glances at both of us. I'll work on getting her erroneous assault complaint dismissed, and see if I can leverage it to our advantage by filing a counterclaim of harassment. I'll also try for protection orders for both of you and Carrie Taylor, but regardless, you all need to stay far, far away from her. Absolutely, I assured him, taking the opportunity to palm my husband's fine, taut ass as I passed behind him. He shot me a wry glance over his shoulder. I blew him a kiss. It tickled me that he would feel even the slightest bit of jealousy. The most impressive thing about Arash was that he held his own next to Gideon. He certainly couldn't surpass him. While I'd seen that Arash could be every bit as threatening as my husband, it wasn't his default setting. Gideon was always dangerous. No one ever mistook him for anything else. I was intensely attracted to that about him, understood that I would never tame him. And God, was he gorgeous. He knew it, too. Knew how dazzled I was by him. But the green-eyed monster could still get the better of him. "You'll stay for dinner?" I asked Arash. No idea what I'm making yet, but we ruined your plans and I feel bad about that.
It's still early.
Gideon took a deep swallow of his wine.
He can make other plans.
I'd love to stay for dinner, Arash said, grinning wickedly.
I couldn't resist copping another feel, so I reached around my husband to get my wine and caressed his thigh while I was at it. I brushed my breasts across his back as I withdrew my hand. Lightning quick, Gideon's hand caught my wrist. He squeezed, and a shiver of arousal slid through me. Those blue eyes turned on me.
"You want to misbehave?"
he asked, silkily. I was instantly desperate for him. Because he looked so cool and savagely civilized, completely contained, while he basically asked if I wanted to fuck. He had no idea how much. I heard a faint buzz. Still holding me captive by the wrist, Gideon looked across the island at Arash.
"Pass my phone over."
Arash looked at me and shook his head. Even as he turned to dig Gideon's phone out of the suit jacket on the bar stool.
"How you put up with him, I will never know."
"He's great in bed," I quipped. "And he's not surly there, so..." Gideon yanked me into his side and bit my earlobe. My nipples tightened into hard points. He growled, almost inaudibly against my neck, though I doubted he cared if Arash heard. Breathless, I pulled away and tried to focus on cooking. I hadn't taken over Gideon's kitchen before, hadn't a clue where anything was or what he had stocked, aside from what I'd glimpsed while getting coffee ready for the police. I found an onion and located a knife and cutting board. Grateful as I was for the distraction, I had to do something else besides getting us both revved up.
"Right,"
Gideon said into the phone with a sigh.
"I'm coming."
I looked up. "Do you have to go somewhere?"
"No. Angus is bringing Lucky up."
I grinned.
"Who's Lucky?"
Arash asked. "Gideon's dog." The lawyer looked suitably shocked.
"You have a dog?"
"I do now,"
Gideon said ruefully, leaving the kitchen. When he returned a moment later with a squirming Lucky happily licking his jaw, I melted. There he stood. In his vest and shirt sleeves, a titan of industry, a global powerhouse, and he was being overwhelmed by the cutest puppy ever. Picking up his phone, I unlocked it and snapped a picture. That was going into a frame ASAP. While I was at it, I texted Carrie. "Hey, it's Ava. Want to come over to the penthouse for dinner?" I waited a beat for him to reply, then set Gideon's phone down and went back to chopping.
I should have listened to you about Anne, I told Gideon as we returned to the living room after saying goodbye to Arash. I'm sorry.
His hand at my lower back slid over farther, cupping my waist.
Don't be.
It's got to be frustrating for you to deal with my stubbornness.
You're great in bed, and you're not stubborn there, so.
I laughed as he tossed my words back at me. I was happy. Spending the evening with him and Arash, watching how relaxed and easy he was with his friend, being able to move around the penthouse as if it were my home. I feel married, I murmured, realizing that I hadn't truly felt that way before. We had the rings and the vows, but those were the trappings of marriage, not the reality of it.
You should,
he replied, with a familiar note of arrogance.
Since you are and will be for the rest of your life.
I looked at him as we settled on the sofa. Do you? His gaze went to the playpen by the fireplace where Lucky slept.
Are you asking if I feel domesticated?
That will never happen, I said dryly. Gideon looked at me, searching.
Do you want me to be?
I ran my hand down his thigh because I couldn't help myself. No.
Tonight, you liked having Arash here.
I shot him a look. You're not jealous of your lawyer, are you? That would be ridiculous.
I don't like it either.
He scowled.
But that's not what I meant. You like having people over.
Yes. I frowned. Don't you? He looked away, his lips pursed.
It's fine.
I stilled. Gideon's home was his sanctuary. Before me, he'd never brought any women here. I'd assumed he had entertained his guy friends, but maybe not. Maybe the penthouse was where he retreated from everyone. I reached for his hand. I'm sorry, Gideon. I should have asked you first. I didn't think about it, and I should have. It's your home.
Our home,
he corrected, focusing back on me.
What are you apologizing for? You have every right to do whatever you like here. You don't have to ask me for permission for anything.
And you shouldn't feel invaded in your own home.
Our home,
he snapped.
You need to grasp that concept, Ava, quickly.
I jerked back from his sudden flare of temper. You're mad. He stood and rounded the coffee table, his body vibrating with tension.
You went from feeling married to acting like you're a guest in my house.
Our house, I corrected. Which means we share it, and you have the right to say you'd rather we didn't entertain here. Gideon shoved a hand through his hair, a sure sign of his increasing agitation.
I don't give a shit about that.
You're certainly acting like you do, I said evenly.
For fuck's sake.
He faced me, his hands on his lean hips.
Arash is my friend. Why would I care if you cook him dinner?
Were we circling back to jealousy? I cooked dinner for you and invited him to join us.
Fine, whatever.
It doesn't seem fine, 'cause you're pissed.
I'm not.
Well, I'm confused, and that's starting to make me pissed. His jaw tightened. He turned away, walking to the fireplace, and looking at the family photos I'd placed on the mantel. I suddenly regretted doing that. I would be the first to admit that I pushed him into change faster than I should, but I understood the need for a haven, a quiet place to let your guard down. I wanted to be that for him, wanted our home to be that for him. If I made it a place he wanted to avoid, if he ever found it easier to avoid me, then I would effectively be jeopardizing the very marriage I valued more than anything. Gideon, please talk to me. Maybe I'd made that difficult, too. If I've crossed a line, you have to tell me. He faced me again, frowning.
What the hell are you talking about?
I don't know. I don't understand why you're upset with me. Help me understand. Gideon heaved a sigh of frustration, then focused on me with the laser-like precision that had exposed every secret I'd had.
If there weren't anyone else on Earth, just you and me, I'd be okay with that. But that wouldn't be enough for you.
I sat back, startled. His mind was a labyrinth I would never map. You would be okay with just me and no one else, indefinitely? No competitors to squash, no global domination to plan? I snorted. You'd be bored out of your mind.
Is that what you think?
That's what I know.
What about you?
He challenged.
How would you manage with no friends to invite over and no one else's life to meddle in?
My gaze narrowed. I don't meddle. He gave me a patient look.
Would I be enough for you? If there were no one else?
There is no one else.
Ava, answer the question.
I had no idea where he was coming from, but that only made it easier for me to answer him. You fascinate the fuck out of me, you know that? You're never boring. A lifetime alone with you wouldn't be long enough to figure you out.
Could you be happy?
Having you all to myself? That would be heaven. My mouth curved. I have a Tarzan fantasy. You Tarzan, me Jane. The tension in his shoulders visibly eased and a faint smile touched his mouth.
We've been married a month. Why am I just now hearing about this?
I figured I'd give it a few months before I whipped out the freaky. Gideon flashed me a rare wide smile and fried my brain in the process.
How does the fantasy go?
Oh, you know. I waved one hand carelessly. Treehouse, loincloth, weather hot enough to put a sheen of sweat on you, but not too hot. You'd be seething with the need to fuck, but have no experience doing it. I'd have to show you how. He stared at me.
You have a sexual fantasy in which I'm a virgin?
It took a lot of effort not to laugh at his incredulity. In every way, I said, with utmost seriousness. You've never seen breasts or a woman's pussy before mine. I have to show you how to touch me, what I like. You catch on quick, but then I've got a wild man on my hands. You can't get enough.
That's reality.
He headed toward the kitchen.
I have something for you.
A loincloth? He answered over his shoulder.
How about what goes in it?
My mouth curved. I half expected him to come back out with wine. I straightened when I saw that he had something small and bright red in his hand, a color and shape I recognized as Cartier. A present? Gideon crossed the distance between us with his confident, sexy stride. Excited, I rose onto my knees. Gimme, gimme. He shook his head, holding his hand aloft as he sat.
You can't have what I haven't given you yet.
I sank back down, putting my hands on my thighs.
In answer to your questions.
He brushed his fingertips across my cheek.
Yes, I feel married.
My pulse fluttered.
Coming home to you?
He murmured, his gaze on my mouth.
Watching you whip up dinner in our kitchen? Even having damned Arash here? That's what I want. You. This life we're building.
Gideon. My throat burned. He looked down at the red suede pouch in his hand. He flipped open the button that kept it closed and poured two platinum crescents into the palm of his hand. Wow. My hand went to my throat. He caught my left wrist and pulled it gently into his lap, sliding one half of the bracelet beneath it. The other half he held up to me, so I could see that he'd inscribed something inside. Always mine. Forever yours. Gideon. Oh, boy, I breathed, watching as my husband fit the top half of the bracelet to the bottom. This is so getting you laid. His soft laugh made me fall deeper in love with him. The bracelet had a screw motif that circled the entire band. with two actual screws on the sides that he secured with a small screwdriver.
This,
he held up the screwdriver,
is mine.
I watched him tuck it into his pocket, understanding that I wouldn't be able to get the bracelet off without him. Not that I'd want to. I already treasured it,